There are big crimes, the kind that could land you in prison if you were found out, and there are small ones, something we might scream in a moment of rage. They can even be something that we never said or never did that we should have. Jill McCorkle is the author of books including the New York Times bestseller Life After Life. She's been called one of our wryest, warmest, and wisest storytellers, and now she's probing the misdeeds and secrets that she says can haunt us forever. She has a new collection of short stories called Old Crimes and Other Stories. In the first one, there is a young woman who's in a writing class. She's given an assignment to think of an everyday object that can be used in different ways, in different stories. Here's Jill McCorkle on that object and its ordinary and sometimes eerie uses.
So she chose a belt, and she describes it as a belt could be a song or a drink or a slap. The belt, looping and connecting since 3300 BCE. Leather, suede, satin, and silk, notched, cinched, buckled. It was a fashion statement, a utilitarian transport for tools and treasures, an object grown-ups could use to threaten children. It was a murder weapon, binding hands and feet or wrapped around the throat. A belt, a room. Inside a room, behind a door, a man takes off his belt. Who is the man? What is the situation? Is anyone else in the room?
When I read that, I found that completely chilling. And the belt appears in different stories. And I want you to talk about Confessional, the story featuring a young couple. They're in an antique store and come across an old mahogany confessional booth that I think was from Florence that had been well used. They decide to buy it. They fit it in their home, awkwardly, and they decide to use it for confessions. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, for better or worse, they decide to.
Let's just say worse.
For confessions.
Do you want to read a little bit?
Yeah, so this couple, they get into the habit of sort of taking turns being in the booth and exchanging information about their lives that they haven't told before.
And we'll hear their confessions back and forth, starting with him.
It was not her he'd come to see that night after they had broken up, but her friend across the hall. He had always really liked her friend, and in fact, the two of them had gotten together one weekend before the breakup. He had thought he could get to the door without her seeing him, but busted. She was so glad to see him. How could he ever tell her the truth? Until now, she said. That would have been when her father was dying. She almost said that. Instead, she said, I once read your journal. That was not really true, but his sharp intake of breath, followed by her silence, let her know there was substance there, something to be learned. She, sometimes the way you chew gets on my last nerve, and I have yet to see you floss. He, she meant nothing to me. I wanted to make you jealous, and now that you're ruining the game and saying mean things, if you read my journal, you ought to know that. And you also ought to know I hate when you spray your hair like an old woman. I hate when you eat in bed and wipe your hand on the sheet. Truce. The rope momentarily placed down in the grass and abandoned like a snake that could rear its head at any time. And then, he. I once saw this kid running from a parent. I assumed a parent in the parking lot of Home Depot. The man had a belt wrapped around his wrist and the kid called him a hateful son of a bitch and screamed for someone to help him. I didn't know what I was seeing. The guy looked decent enough except for that belt. He wants her to say there was nothing he could have done about it, but she refuses to give him that so easily. She would have called 911, or if not that, she would have at least said something to the store manager. The silence grows uncomfortable, and finally, in her slow, measured priestess voice, she says, "You must never do that again."
You can hear the power dynamic switching off from one to the other.
Oh, yeah. It's not good. But as this young couple decide to give information to one another, you can just feel that destruction of the faith they have in one another and the misconceptions of who that person really is.
And can we give away the end?
Sure. Yeah, they return it. They return it. And the woman in the antique store sells them another object appropriate for where they've been left in their marriage.
One more character I thought was very interesting. This is in the story, The Lineman. And you got the idea, I guess, from the song by Jimmy Webb, made famous by Glen Campbell. It contrasts the life of a man whose slow and silent work, stringing and repairing telephone lines, with the speed and the noise of his daughter's way of communicating. Just give us a little idea of somebody whose work feels no longer relevant.
I love this guy. And he brings out my own Luddite ways for sure. This is a man whose whole life has been about communication. And now at the time of the story, he finds himself struggling to connect. He's going through a very unpleasant divorce. And at one end, he has a 14-year-old daughter, always on her phone, who he's desperately trying to communicate with. And at the other end, he has a mother lost in dementia, who he's trying to connect with. So I saw it as, in many ways, a story about the great irony of a life built on communication, and now everything has changed.
Could you read the part where he's expressing the worst fears about what happens when people like him are no longer around to fix the phone lines, to fix the lines of communication? And he's thinking about Amanda, his daughter, and her lines of communication, which are so different.
Okay. Now I'm wondering what people are going to do when the big blow comes, when all the lines are knocked out and the generators fail and we're turned back to a day guided by nothing but the sun and the moon. Do you know how to read a clock face? Do you know how to read a map? I ask Amanda, who sometimes listens, but most times doesn't. I say how it used to be a person actually had to get up and walk to one place in the house to answer the phone. That it was tethered there to the wall with cords and a plug that slid neatly into a jack that people like me came and installed. You had to get up off your ass to change the channel, too. Sometimes you had to put tinfoil on rabbit ears and twist your body this way and that to pick up one of the three channels available in our area.
And so what is he worried about with Amanda, his daughter, when he sees how she lives her life, spends her time?
I think he's worried that he will disappear in her life, that her life is filled with this means of communication and a kind of fast-track, fragmented world that he's lost.
The characters are sympathetic, but it seemed like, as I was reading this, there's a lot of mental grime going on here. I wonder if you feel like there are just some old crimes, hidden secrets that are insurmountable. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, I think in that story, confessional, you know, it is a kind of Pandora's box. And I think once there is that acknowledgement, you can't just leave it there. You know, it is the snake in the grass. And once it's loose, I think if you're ever going to get beyond it, you have to deal with it. That would be the real work ahead, to get beyond the damage done.
The book is called Old Crimes and Other Stories by Jill McCorkle. Thank you so much, Jill. A pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. What a great pleasure to be here.